Chapter 19. Numa Vessel Raleigh, on station in the Gulf of Mexico. Paul Trout found himself thankful that the Raleigh carried several ROVs. He'd been underwater in plenty of Numa's submersibles. Not one of them had enough head or legroom for him. He was much more comfortable sitting in the air-conditioned confines of Oslo. Gamay sat beside him. Take a sediment sample outside the impact zone for a baseline. We can take a few more as we get closer to ground zero. Paul did as requested, directing the ROV to hover over the bottom, where it extended a tube into the silt and vacuumed up a small quantity. Sample one secured, he said. Sitting behind Paul and Gamay, the FEMA observer yawned. What's the point of all this? To make you believe we're doing something other than what we're doing, Paul thought. Gamay offered a better answer. Sediment samples will allow us to test the damage to the aquatic ecosystem more accurately than water samples. She spoke in her most cheery scientific voice. For example, certain types of microbes that are abundant in the water might be settling down into the sediment with significantly affected genetic structures. You could see DNA intersplicing errors, mutations. And of course, any contamination in the aquatic microbe community affects the fish, and then the larger predators, including humans. Best way to search for a problem is starting at the bottom of the food chain. Reynolds looked at them blankly. But there's nothing living down there, he said. It's all inert mud. That's exactly why we have to check it, Gamay insisted. How many samples do you think we'll need? Paul asked. Well, at least 100, spread out over various parts of the disaster zone, Gamay said. That could take hours, Reynolds said. 5 or 6 at least, Gamay added, laying it on as thick as she could. That was enough for Reynolds. He stood up. Well, I have to report in anyway. I'll check back with you in a few hours, when you're halfway done. Good luck with all this. He gathered up a few belongings and left. With the door shut tight, Paul looked over at Gamay. Think he'll be back? Not unless someone forces him, Gamay said. Looked like he might physically die of boredom if he had to watch us for 6 hours. I would, too, Paul said, if we really had to get 100 samples of barren sediment. Let's get the fun part done first in case he does come back. Gamay turned the 3D system on and began directing Paul based on the sonar readings. Head due east. You should find the smallest of the fires about 1/2 mile out. Paul guided the ROV on a heading of 090. It took a few minutes to cover the distance, but soon the glow of the nearest fire began to appear on the ROV's cameras. That's smaller and less intense than it was this morning, Paul said. Whatever gas is causing this must be dwindling. That's good and bad, Gamay said. Let's get our samples before the candle burns out. Paul maneuvered the ROV into position. If you get the probe into the broken pipe, you can capture the gas before it ignites, Gamay suggested. That's the plan, Paul said. He directed the ROV right down onto the pipe itself. The fire burned only 16 inches from the camera. Be careful, Gamay said. That fire is over 1,000 degrees. Paul nodded, held the ROV steady, and extended the probe. The interior of the probe was lined with tempered glass. The exterior was made of titanium. The chamber they would suck the gas into was currently vacuum-sealed, containing no air, water, or other contaminants that the gas might react with. Once Paul had the probe in place, he would break the seal, and the volatile hydrophoric gas would be sucked into the chamber and held in its inert form. Let's hope this works, Paul said. The probe inched forward, banging against both sides of the broken pipe. Careful, Gamay said. I'm being careful, he replied. Finally, the probe was in the pipeline. Here goes nothing, Paul said. He pressed a button and broke the vacuum seal. 1 liter of gas was sucked in through the probe and stored, with the system automatically resealing itself once the container pressure rose to a certain level. We have it, Paul said, and without blowing ourselves up. All right, now get out of there. Paul retracted the probe, pulled the ROV back, and turned it away from the fire. He'd come through 180 degrees and was moving the ROV away when the door to the Oslo opened, and Reynolds popped his head back in. Gamet acted quickly, flicking off the holographic display. Paul sat tall and rigidly. He realized the fire was plainly visible in the ROV's aft camera. Switching it off would be too obvious, but Reynolds might not be able to see past him if he sat up straight. "I forgot to ask," Reynolds said, paying no attention to the screens. "Can you forward me a copy of your report when you're done examining the sediment samples? I just want to send it up to Washington with everything else." As Reynolds spoke, Paul brought the ROV down to the sediment layer once more, turning it so that the fires weren't visible on camera. "Sure thing," Gamet said. "It'll take a while, but I'll send you a copy as soon as it's done." "Thanks," he said. "How many samples have you collected?" Paul knew better than to blurt out an answer, in case Gamet was about to voice a different lie. He looked down at a paper with scribbled notes on it as if he'd been keeping track. "This is,
We're up to 16, Gamet said.
To maintain the illusion, Paul vacuumed up another sample of sediment, which would be stored in a separate container. 16 going on 17, he said. Reynolds sighed. "I admire your dedication. See you later." With that, he backed out and shut the door once again. "That was close," Paul said. "At least the hard part is over." "For you," Gamet said. "I have to write up a fake report detailing 100 sediment samples, none of which will have anything in them because all of this takes place below the photic zone." Paul had to laugh. He knew Gamet would want his help, but thankfully he'd be too busy studying the gas. He glanced at the instruments, checking on the sample. The gas was steady and holding stable at 40 degrees. The sediment samples were... "There's a slight pressure build in the sediment tank," he said. Gamet leaned closer. "Only in the sediment sample you just collected. Did you suck in some of the gas?" "No," Paul said. "There was no cross-contamination." "The pressure is rising ever so slightly in the sealed chamber," Gamet said, fine-tuning the instrument. "If I didn't know better, I'd tell you there was bacteria in that barren soil." A system check told them the instruments were working perfectly. "It's not a false reading," Gamet said. Paul grinned at her. "Looks like you're going to have something to put in your report after all."